this is Paloma and Davy Jones, and today we are talking to a couple of members of Van Allen Belt.
Yeah, I'm Farron, and I sing the pop.
I'm Ben Ferris, the keyboardist, sometimes guitarist, producer.
All right, well, I cannot do phone interviews without asking this question, so I hope it doesn't make you guys uncomfortable, and I hope you'll be good sports, but what are you wearing?
I'm a little ashamed of that right now. I'm in the process of moving, so I kind of look pretty dumpy. I'm wearing, like, some jeans and my boyfriend's band t-shirt, so nothing great, nothing exciting. I'm covered in dust, actually, right now.
So what are you wearing, Ben?
Blue jeans, the black sort of business casual looking thrift store kind of shirt. I don't know. What do you call it?
I guess it is kind of casual.
Yeah.
He looks very nice. He looks much nicer than I.
Once upon a time, some people got together and decided to form a band called the Van Allen Belt. They hoped that someday, and you can fill in the blank.
I hope that someday everybody will be a little bit happier.
It actually didn't start as a band. It was more of a studio project.
Ah.
Wow.
More or less, the came after the album. It was kind of moose, I guess I would say.
Yeah, it's definitely the band until, the CD was mastered and everything happened.
Wow. Okay, well, what things could I wrap in aluminum foil and cook together in a microwave so that when the little bell rings and I open the door, you guys would pop out?
Well, wouldn't that cause a fire if there was aluminum foil in the microwave?
Not necessarily.
Have you tried this?
So what could I put in the foil?
I would. Are we looking for food?
Anything. No, it doesn't have to be food. It could be anything.
I mean, I'd say, like, the formula of the music, it's kind of I would say it's sort of recycling, but not rehashing, I guess. I wanted to do the album because I've been so bothered by the recent trend, I guess, in the music business where, like, we seem to want to rehash things.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, just, like, parts, I guess, pieces of things that have already happened. Basically, just I steal sonic values as colors, more or less.
Mm.
And repiece them, to shape them into something new.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that would be wrapped into foil necessarily. I mean, it's basically everything. We really like every kind of music and try to, use an element of everything.
Yeah, we've definitely got a lot of different kinds of feedback from when we play live and on the internet. You know, we get kind of a nostalgic feel. We get 70s. The other day, somebody compared us to Janis Joplin's band.
Wow.
So it's just a kind of retro thing, but the music itself is sort of not really describable because we have a set genre. So, I mean, the three things we picked for our genre on the internet were, like, healing and experimental.
I'm serious about healing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not really a joke. We ultimately want to make manipulative music. A lot to admit to, but I mean, we want to F with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
But physically, though, like, there actually are if we actually take great measures to use sonic frequency to manipulate, kind of, the way that white noise was in the late 60s, I guess.
So that leads me to this question in some way. What could you tell us a little bit about your record, The Meal Ticket to Purgatory?
Well, Meal Ticket to Purgatory is very big. A culmination of things that both Ben and I have been recording for almost 2 years now, and songs that Ben has written than 2 years ago. I don't know. What do you think?
Actually, a lot of the music was written when I was a child.
Yeah.
I just rewrote the words recently. The music itself actually was pretty much from age 16 to 19. I actually haven't written pop music in a while. I just got back into the swing of that. I was more or less doing jazz experimental projects for this.
Wow.
Of thought in a lot of ways, but it's structured as first chorus pop music.
But why that title?
I would say a lot of the songs are very ambiguous and have double meanings.
Mm-hmm.
And that itself has multiple meanings. It's more or less not a literal theological, you know, type of thing, but more or less a state of mind.
The Meal Ticket to Purgatory is going to be like our meal ticket. Like, if we can't help, then we could make it into that mediocre level of people who aren't poor and aren't extremely rich. The people who felt good about themselves.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, you know, I guess, I would say it's in a lot of ways about Pittsburgh, and I kind of, I think it's sort of representative of purgatory because we are in the wealthiest country in the world, but we're sort of in the asshole of the wealthiest country in the world. The Rust Belt, really, and growing up in the Rust Belt, it's like the 80s never left. You know?
Wow.
We're in our part of the country.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of laugh about it, but then it's also kind of, I would say a lot of the songs don't really have an easy message to them, because on the one hand you kind of laugh, but on the other hand it's there's usually a little bit of sadness.
Yeah, and that's what that leads to my next question. And what I've really liked about what I've heard is that you make these almost whimsical references to things, but at the same time there's some serious stuff going on. And would you tell me a little bit about your song "Slanted to the Left"?
Well, that's the newest one, I think.
Yeah, well, that will be on the next album.
Right.
The companion piece, actually, called Vancouver, All the Reasons Why, which is more or less to talk about the song, which I could talk about probably for the whole interview if I get going. But it's trying to ask questions. I would hope that it's asking questions more than necessarily pointing direct fingers. But I would say in hip-hop for many years, these questions have been asked. I just didn't really feel that for the rock and roll audience, it was being asked really necessarily in the right way. We don't really listen to pieces like that. I guess we wanted to present this, we feel, is a very important issue. It is more listenable, I guess. It's no coincidence that it's a very easy song to digest musically.
it's important that 9/11 and terrorism and issues that are affecting the United States, like, we as a country don't really have a good way of looking at real things that are going on. So people do pay attention to real things that go on. The more we can remember that and the more we can talk about it and ask questions and talk amongst ourselves, I think it's better, you know, because the media is just going to forget everything and they're just going to try and play up the fact that, you know, everybody's stupid and people forget about what's important. So, like, you know, because we're people who consume music and put it out, you know, there are artists, we're musicians. Like, why shouldn't we talk about these things? Why shouldn't we make each other a little upset? Because the more we talk about it, you know, the better it is, I think, in the long run, you know?
Right. And, you know, but why do you think, though, that the media is so screwed up? Do you think that it's at this point they realize, though, that so many people have come to rely upon their message and not really question?
I think there's a little of that, and I've always noticed Americans really seem to hate their own history. there's a conditioning at an early age when you're in school to find subjects like history and politics boring. I don't think there's a, you know, necessarily like an actual conspiracy to dumb us down, but somehow this has happened. I think James Lowen's Lies My Teacher Told Me points out that very, very interesting. It's just that we will not actually tell the juicy, gossipy, you know, interesting little tidbits about people and dumb it down to, you know, these textbook paragraphs that, I think then the same can apply to the media. It's like a lot of people just think the news is a very boring thing, and they kind of stay away from it.
It's a waste of time now, you know, like,
second blurbs about,
the world in 80 seconds. Like, what are you talking about? Why would you bother to come up with a segment like that? What important thing could you possibly talk about if you're summarizing the entire world into 80 seconds? You
know? And you know what? If you think about it, it must have taken them more than 80 seconds to think that up. That's the shame. Well, you know what I mean? To put it together, I wonder how many minutes it took them. And then they give the viewer, the listener, 80 seconds worth.
It's a lot of time and a lot of money.
great.
All right, I'm going to change the subject here, although I'm sure we could go on for hours on this topic. But we don't have that much time. If you could have a look inside the brains of any three musicians, artists, or writers, or anybody else for that matter, living or dead, who would you choose?
I mean, I would probably, you know, go for, like, Mozart. I'm so big, you know.
Yeah, you know, like Beethoven, go for somebody who just lasted the test of time, you know.
I guess I've always felt most composers do make very understandable music. I mean, I guess, like, it's really once in a blue moon. I mean, I would say, like, you know, Mozart, Beethoven, you know, maybe Mahler or, like,
yeah, sure.
Like,
Debussy, Chopin.
Yeah. Like, something that's... I've actually been talking about this a lot lately, which is kind of changing the subject, but it's on the idea of the composer. I think the kids that are going to school to learn these things, like, to learn the old writing out music and, conducting a symphony and actually, like, bringing it into action, I think over the years have really with the spirit of, you know, what composition is, I guess.
You know, it's sort of not really... Music's so different now. I just have to say that anybody from the past to get into their mind would be just such an amazing thing because they come from a completely different cultural state of mind, a completely different time. So it would just be a history lesson in itself to go after somebody from the classical genre or anyone from, you know, the of, you know, the...
Yeah, I guess some people, and now that I think about Charlie Parker or, Thelonious Monk,
mm-hmm.
people like just as much.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, perhaps a little more because I think it's a little harder for me to understand. In the days of Beethoven, he was working with, you know, a palette that was a lot more limited than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So his actual sound production. I think we're now in the recorded era, and, you know, like the Beatles will always be most revered by recordings as the Beatles. You know, people will continue to play in house bands and cover them, but it won't, you know, to say we're back in the day, it was all in the hands of, you know, whether or not an academy would present the music with their orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the games have changed. Right? The rules to the game have changed.
Yeah, certainly. And musicians themselves have changed a lot, too.
Yeah.
Who write music from the 1800s, mm-hmm. I would like to get their CD from the library and cut it into pieces and do stuff with the recording of it.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you so much. Huh. If we connected a cable between your brains and a television screen, what would we see and hear?
Cable between our brains and a television screen, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know what's coming out of my head as I'm watching TV.
What's going on in your head?
What would broadcast on the TV?
Okay.
Have you ever thought of that one?
Well, I'm a girl, so I'm very absorbing. Like, I probably of my 20s and my late teen years trying to absorb as much as I can, and I think I'm still in that realm. Like, I kind of used to be an artist, and then I sort of fell off the boat and went to music because I feel like being a musician.
I think that's art. I don't know why. Yeah, that's not an artist.
Well, it's more of a filter production. It's like just some weird thing that's going on in my head because it's into my head. But then it made me a little insane. So I understand things that were going on around me and trying to become a part of that. A lot more positive than just, you know, looking at my own madness, trying to create an image with me.
So your answer, what would be on the TV?
Well, probably a vortex of vertigo.
All right.
Right, get dizzy. But that might be how it looks. I don't know. Have you ever seen the Hitchcock movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ben?
Come on, you've had some time to think about this.
Probably. Absolute mania. Probably like, I think it would look like my room. There would just be shit everywhere. Like, ported in my room, like in this room with clothes all over the floor, books all over the floor, you know, CDs scattered everywhere.
Yeah, helicopters outside the window.
Helicopters. Yeah, that's enough for helicopters,
All right, well, what's the first song that each of you learned to play?
Learned to play.
The first song?
Uh-huh. Or learned to sing, or that you actually consciously remember.
Being young, I think.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
I remember writing songs before I learned how to play songs.
Wow.
Huh.
was actually not taught how to play piano. My sister was, so when she was painstakingly practicing, like I remember her like fighting with my mother all the time, and my mom really wanted to play piano, and then she would leave the piano, and I would go tinker around with it. Like it was probably about age five. I mean, I used to like walk around, you know, the neighborhood singing songs to myself. probably always. I actually didn't really learn how to play songs until I joined the band and played trombone. which went up pretty quickly, actually.
So I think I was very interested in it as a kid, and my parents wouldn't let me. And when I was in, like, kindergarten, I think, some of my friends would teach me songs on the piano, and I remember playing the hell out of some Heart and Soul. You remember that, the two parts?
Yeah, that was the easy part.
And that little rolling song where you use your knuckles and you hit the black tube. Yeah, that one.
I threw that into our last set, actually. I threw in a little bit of them.
It'll work. Yeah. No, I couldn't even hear that.
What was the very last song that you listened to?
We were actually just listening to a Tropicalia compilation.
Yeah, we were actually, and then it went in.
Kano Veloso.
Yeah.
Like he was involved in it in some way, like whether he wrote it or sang it or.
Ah. Wow.
Actually, you can probably find in the Van Halen belt.
Yeah, probably somewhere.
Right on.
All right, well, if you weren't musicians, what other work would you want to do that you haven't done already?
I was actually supposed to be a film, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, that was
I was supposed to be a painter, visual artist. But I decided to stay in Pittsburgh instead, so things changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I always like in growing up, actually, everyone always viewed me more as the filmmaker. I was movies, you know, that cartoon. It was always videotaping things. I would actually say very.
Wow.
You know, nobody liked the way I sang when I was a kid, because my voice was like. So I'd always get picked as, like, the male character in shows, and everybody just thought I was a really good actor because I could be a boy. Because I have the low voice, and I'm very tall, so.
So could you tell us what's coming up on the horizon for you?
We have two albums that are already written that we just need to record. The next one, actually, will have a very different sound, but as I said, it's kind of a companion piece where songs that didn't make it on the last album, more or less just because the album was already so long, because they were any lesser.
Yeah.
But it's going to be presented in a funkier of a way, I guess I would say. It has more of a hip hop flavor to it, I guess. turntables on a lot of the tracks. Did play drums a lot and now put the sticks down and pulling up the records. He's also a very good DJ. So.
I've already recorded quite a few live takes. I'm pretty good.
Oh, wow. Right on.
Great.
When would we see the fruits of that? I guess it's kind of hard to put a date on that, I understand, but...
Probably pretty soon. I guess in the next few months, probably.
Great.
There are already hundreds of songs written, it's just a matter of having the time to record them.
Right. Well, we'd love to hear when that happens. That certainly let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, now, I don't know if this is a stupid thing to do or not, but I like to have people do this, so will you please give me your best pirate impressions?
Her boyfriend's band actually has a song called The Worst Pirate.
Yeah.
which is, it's all about girls not being able to be pirates.
It's about girls pretending to be pirates and being criticized because obviously they're girls, so they can't be pirates, and they make fun of all the little things
which I
just girls do that
I,
are not pirate-like.
I don't know.
They're the fiercest.
Let's see. Arr, baby, I'm Patsy the Pirate. SpongeBob is my best friend.
I do thank you that I had the chance to join in on this one. Palomo was very kind to let me join in on this one. Thank you so much.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I'm looking forward to hearing the new stuff.
Oh.